This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Last week, Governor Scott Walker called the Wisconsin legislature into special session to focus on opioid and heroin abuse. Several bills and budget items that relate to prevention and treatment of heroin use will be considered in this year's legislative session as communities across the state, including La Crosse, deal with increased use of heroin. Joining us today to talk about state and local efforts to combat opioid and heroin abuse in the Cooley region are State Representative Jill Billings from La Crosse, Al Bliss, health educator with the La Crosse County Health Department, and Dr. Chris Eberlein, emergency physician at Gunderson Medical Center and co-chair of the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force. And Representative Billings, can you start off by kind of explaining, I guess, the significance of the governor calling a special session on heroin abuse and kind of what a special session is?
Well, a special session is set aside for an issue that has extreme importance and urgency attached to it. So when we're in special session, no one can bring up other legislation other than what we are there to consider. The governor realizes, as many of us do now in Wisconsin, that we are in the middle of an opioid heroin epidemic. And this is an issue that needs to be addressed and needs to be addressed swiftly in order to get things into the budget and also take advantage of some federal grant dollars that Senator Tammy Baldwin authored and pulled out for states to deal with the opioid epidemics that is really sweeping the United States.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit more about this federal funding and, you know, why it is important for Wisconsin?
Currently, more people die from heroin and opioid overdoses than are killed in traffic fatalities or from breast cancer. I mean, this is an issue that has really, along with other states, is a challenge in Wisconsin. And so it's important that the task force look at these issues and see what we can do as legislators. The recommendations of the task force include 11 bills. It's $12 million in programming and has 19 agency actions that are attached to it. So I think it's a really good first approach to this after the HOPE legislation that we've considered in the past that has proven to be successful in getting more opioids out of our communities and less prescriptions. And so I'm in support of this. The task force will still be meeting on a quarterly basis, so we're not done with our work by any means. But because of that time constraint, we really needed to get a proposal out early so it could be in the budget and we could take advantage of that federal grant money that was really provided through legislation authored by Senator Baldwin.
And you're, of course, talking about the governor's task force on opioid abuse, which you are a member of. And, you know, you mentioned the report that came out from the co-chairs of that committee recently that is, you know, offered several recommendations. And I thought one that was interesting referenced the Rural Hospital Graduate Medical Training Program and expanding that. You know, why do you think expanding opportunities for, you know, medical students to kind of be in rural hospitals is important for addressing opioid and heroin abuse?
One positive thing on this task force is that we had members from throughout the state. So we got to see the situations that exist in all corners of the state. I was lucky to have a seat at the table on behalf of Western Wisconsin, along with our health department director, Jen Rambowski. And Senator Bewley, Janet Bewley from up north, kept talking about the struggle that there is to get treatment in areas that are rural in Wisconsin. In La Crosse, we've done a great job, I think, with our local task force and with our community providers on working on this issue. In some of the more rural areas, they just don't have the capacity that we do. They can't take advantage of a lot of opportunities that we have in La Crosse. So some of the initiatives of the task force really focus on those areas with more docs, more treatment opportunities, so that we can do better in our rural areas.
And obviously, heroin abuse is an issue in La Crosse, and, you know, we've kind of seen this issue growing this year. Dr. Eberlein, you know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, why this is, I guess, becoming more prevalent in La Crosse?
I think what we're seeing is the result of more addicts that had been addicted or dependent on opioids, and as you have tightened up the supply with providers, they've switched to illicit drugs. In addition, I think we had a big bottleneck or supply issue, and we've gotten a lot of addicts, and I think it's going to be several years before, 3 to 5 year delay before we see a lot of the legislation that we've done and the work we've done on the task force to really see that take effect. So there is going to be a delay. I think in the next year or two, we'll see the worst of it before it gets better.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, why going from opioids to heroin, you know, why that is kind of the next step or the ramping up?
Well, once you're addicted to an opioid, and what they're doing is they're replacing the prescription opioid often with an injectable form of heroin. And the reason being is because they can no longer easily get the prescription, or the heroin form is cheaper.
Al, the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force, you know, it's been around for a while now and worked on different issues. You know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how this task force kind of got started in La Crosse County and what you guys have been able to accomplish?
Sure. The task force began in October of 2013 as a result of the Criminal Justice Management Council meeting with the health department officials and others. And we, at that point, there was 15 members that were appointed to the task force. The goal at that time was to come up and develop 4 to 6 recommendations in about 6 months on how we could address this opioid overdose issues. And particularly at that point, it was a heroin issue. We were not actually even discussing some of the issues with the synthetic opioids or the pain medications or the narcotics at the time. And that's when we got involved. Within months after that, we, you know, were learning by doing basically a needs assessment on the number of arrests related to heroin and other opioids, the other burden report basically that we collected was to collect, for example, the number of cases for Child Protective Service cases, you know, how many, you know, children were impacted by parents who were using drugs, the number of drug-related hospitalizations. All of that were, that information was important for our community to collect to help understand the problem and to develop those strategies. So we met every 2 weeks for 6 months to come up with these 4 to 6 recommendations. And what we didn't realize at the time is that our task force then actually kind of transferred more or less into a coalition of action to actually take these 4 to 6 strategies and implement them. And so I can share with basically what some of those strategies were a little bit later if you want.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about state and regional efforts to address the increasing abuse of heroin and prescription drugs. We're here with Representative Jill Billings, La Crosse County Health Educator Al Bliss, and Dr. Chris Eberlein from the La Crosse County Heroin Task Force. And Al, you're talking about the creation of the La Crosse County Task Force back in 2013. You know, how would you compare the situation in 2013 when the task force started to the current situation?
I would say that the changes that we have seen don't seem to necessarily reflect, you know, some of the outcomes as far as like what we're looking at today. For example, in 2016, we've seen an increase, in fact, the most number of drug-related deaths in our county, 23. That's more so than were reported in any other year. And as Dr. Eberlein was saying, you know, some of this has actually gotten worse, and it's been kind of a bottleneck that people were turning from opioids to heroin, and because of the access and the cheapness of the drug itself has had an impact. But I can tell you some of the changes that have occurred. Here's another example. One of the strategies was to support the prescription drug monitoring program and to look to see how we could increase the number of prescribers who were registered and using this monitoring statewide program. And again, the prescription drug monitoring program is a program that's set up by the states. In fact, all states have them except for one. Basically electronic surveillance to see if people are, you know, doctor shopping, but also the dispensers or the prescribers themselves are reporting this information, and it would red flag if somebody is, you know, going through their prescriptions for too much. So that's an example. But to give you an idea of what those results were, in 2013, there was less than 1% of La Crosse County prescribers registered and using the PDMP, the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. About a year and a half later, there were several trainings. We had the state come in. There's been some other trainings, too, even to the Dental Society as well. And that number jumped from 1% to about 23%. I can't tell you what the exact percentage is right now. You can run the query, and Dr. Eberlein probably could look that up and tell us. But that's been one of the accomplishments, I would say, that I'd say it's going to make some changes here as, you know, as we continue this. One of the other interesting facts that I think, and Dr. Eberlein is probably better versed to speak about this than I am, is you can go to the Wisconsin Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. You can see how many prescriptions of oxycodone, hydrocodone, and all the top, you know, drugs that are being prescribed. And one of the interesting things to note is the past couple of years, there's actually been a decrease in the number of hydrocodone prescriptions. But one thing that I did notice is there was an increase in the number of OxyContin prescriptions that were written here right within our own county. So it's just interesting. We've seen some of the decrease, but yet we've seen some of this increase in other illicit drugs, like Dr. Eberlein was alluding to, such as heroin.
And Representative Billings, heroin and addressing opioid abuse has also been an issue on a state level for a number of years with the HOPE legislation, the Heroin and Opioid Prevention Education, which I believe was also in 2013 first and 2015. Can you talk a little bit about some of the legislation that's already been passed to address heroin and opioid abuse?
Sure. I'll start by telling you a story about a student that I talked to at Viterbo. She contacted me and wanted to share a story that she had with opioids. She had been burned through a cooking fire, and her roommate, both of them had been burned in an accident. They went to the emergency room. They both got some oxycodone, brought it home, needed it just for one night, but she had 12 tablets, and her roommate had 20 tablets. Now, it was a stressful time at school, and she realized that the night that she took that opioid, she slept very well. She thought, well, it must be safe. A doctor gave it to me. So she took one the next night to help sleep. But she felt a little groggy in the morning, so she found a perfect combination was to take half a pill with a glass of wine or a drink before she went to bed. Luckily, she had an appointment with a school counselor, and the school counselor did a drug assessment. By that time, the student had worked through all of her prescription medication and had gone in the medicine cabinet and gotten her roommate's, because her roommate didn't need it anymore, and it was just sitting there in the medicine cabinet. Luckily, she had that drug assessment, and the counselor was able to say, you have a problem here. Do you realize how incredibly addictive this medication can be? And the student had no idea. So even when she knew she really shouldn't be taking it anymore, she still couldn't get rid of the rest of that medication. She just kept it around just in case. Luckily, she had family members who were involved, and they went in and they took it away. Now, with the HOPE legislation, we've been able to decrease, with the prescription drug monitoring program that Al had mentioned earlier, we know that docs are tracking more who's getting what medication. So there are fewer prescriptions being written. So we know there are fewer opioids that are being prescribed in our community. And docs are being more careful about how much they prescribe. Once those medications are prescribed, that we've done a much better job with our drug take-back program. Gunderson was way out in the beginning with a program was someone that they actually hired away from our local household hazardous waste site, where there was a drug take-back program there through the health department, through the county. So we've done a better job in this state, and the legislation that we passed has helped make sure that more of those drugs are taken back. Walgreens now has a drug take-back program that they're working to get implemented nationwide. So there are fewer drugs in our community. I think that's a huge thing that is helpful. We've also increased the ability for people to use Narcan so that we have fewer deaths associated with opioid overdoses, too. So we've done some good prevention work. What we need to do now is really work on the recovery side of it, making sure that there is treatment for people who want to get treatment, and that there aren't waiting lists, there aren't places that have just basically black spots with no docs that exist, no treatment providers that exist in this state. And so part of what we're doing with the legislation from the task force is providing for some of those areas where we just have problems and lack of services.
Representative Billings shared this story of someone who, you know, very easily all of a sudden, you know, slipped into addictive behaviors with an opioid, with prescription drugs. I mean, Dr. Eberlein, is that kind of how fast it happens and how fast it can happen, I guess?
Oh, it sure can. You can become addicted to these medications, even with short prescriptions. Obviously, the longer the prescription, the more at risk you are. I know a lot of patients and other people who have become dependent on this drug and from chronic pain and things like that, and they have an incredible time trying to get off this medication after they've become dependent. And that's one of the reasons why the new prescription drug database that's coming out, it's called the ePDMP, actually starts January 17th, and it took several of our recommendations from the task force and incorporated them, including just a better interface. And now it'll be much, much more user-friendly, and it integrates into the health record, so it's not so hard to access. And you can compare your prescribing habits to others, which I think is very helpful, because otherwise you don't know as a provider, am I prescribing a lot or a little? And not only to others statewide, but also in your region and your hospital, which I think will be very helpful. And that's going to require you to check that database for any prescription that's over 3 days in length, which I think will also be very beneficial to the patients in our communities.
Yeah, and speaking of prescribing practices, do you think that this is an issue where, you know, maybe medical providers need to be looking at alternatives to opioids because they have been shown to have these addiction issues?
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the reasons why we saw a decline in the hydrocodone prescriptions. I think the word is getting out that an opiate is not always the answer, and you need to look at other ways to treat patients' pain. I think everyone's in agreement we need to treat patient pain, but opiates are not always the answer. And now that both the providers as well as the patients are realizing that, that conversation is taking place of what else can I do to help me manage the pain.
Yeah, and what all are, you know, common alternatives, I guess, to a prescription drug?
Depending on the actual thing you're treating, obviously, but everything from the non-steroidals to injections to, you know, they've done chiropractic care, acupuncture, physical therapy, and there is a lot of other things out there that you can do. And we know it's been proven that opioids are not a good treatment for chronic pain because you increase your tolerance and then you just need increasing doses to get to where you were. And so you're just kind of chasing yourself, and it's not the way to treat it. So we need to look at other modalities to treat patients' pain.
That's Dr. Chris Eberlein, emergency physician at Gunderson Medical Center, here with us today to talk about state and county task forces that are working to address heroin abuse. Also joining us is Representative Jill Billings from La Crosse and La Crosse County Health Educator Al Bliss. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Al, what's the next steps? You know, what are the next projects that the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force are hoping to work on?
Still going to be a continuation of promoting the drop boxes, as Representative Billings was talking about. Gunderson has theirs. Mayo actually has, they don't have drop boxes, but they got a product called Detura, which are these pouches that are provided to the patients, and they can they contain activated charcoal, and that, you know, basically renders the pharmaceutical, you know, safe, you know, for disposal, and they can actually throw them into the trash, which sounds a little bit scary, but they can do that. And so that continues to be something that's important. Plus, we have the drop boxes at the 7 law enforcement sites, and we continue to collect more poundage of medications with every collection. We do 2 of the Department of Justice collections each year, which our law enforcement participates in and does a tremendous job with that. But as far as some other efforts, one of the things that we have several work groups actually working on right now is, one is to address some, we call it kind of social detox, or where is a safe place that individuals can go and safely withdraw from the effects when it's not an emergency, or they, you know, they'd have to be in hospitalized. And one of the things that seems to be a struggle is with the statutes that have that govern a social detox center. It seems to be that what we need is an allowance for people to withdraw from other drugs, such as heroin, meth, and other illicit substances. And these social detox centers really only allow the detox for alcohol, sedatives, and also to address mental health issues. So something that this task force is looking at is, how might we have a facility in place? It would almost be run as a pure respite care center. So it wouldn't be run entirely by volunteers. There'd certainly be medical staff and staff present there. But it basically would be a safe place for people to transition to while they're trying to find treatment, because we know that there's waiting lists, as Representative Billings talked about. There's waiting lists for people to get in and get help, or they can't get the help right now. And so this is really important on how to address that. So we have a work group that's going to look at how this type of facility might be able to be brought into, you know, our region. So I think that's one thing. Another thing that we're looking at, too, is to address the improperly disposed needles that are found in our community. And right now we have another work group that's looking at several solutions to this. One is to actually have these sharps containers. They're large. They're like mailbox size. They're like galvanized steel. And so they're locked. They can't be broken into. And we're looking at putting a couple of these up within the community. And not that necessarily everybody who injects drugs is going to use it, but it could be for medical sharps as well. And although we have collections at the local county household hazardous waste, we really those hours are limited because they're during business hours, and they're not always convenient for somebody to drive to Onalaska and to dispose of them. So this is another option. Another option is to, one of the things actually the task force had done is we had a member from the Western Wisconsin Healthcare who provided 1,200 sharps containers. These are 5-quart containers to the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin that distributes the needle program, the needles. And this is going to greatly, I think, increase the number of improperly disposed needles. And in fact, I know I've spoken to that representative, and even less needles have been returned to their organization. But part of the reason is they have these 1,200 boxes that have been distributed to those that come in. So I think that's going to help. The other thing, too, is that we're going to look at collecting the data a little bit more accurately from year to year, and get a better understanding of where exactly some of these hot spots are, and then be able to measure whether or not the decrease, you know, has occurred. So that's something that's really important. So those are 2 things that I would say that are really important. One is the detox or peer respite run care center. That might be a possibility. Another one is addressing the improperly disposed needles.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the improperly disposed needles, because I know that was recently brought up within the community. I talked with the AIDS Resource Center in December about this issue, and, you know, they said that they gave out the most needles they have ever given out this year in La Crosse, and they mentioned that returning the needles isn't always the easiest thing. And so, you know, Dr. Eberlein, can you talk a little bit about, you know, why these needle exchange programs, you know, it doesn't always guarantee that they're going to get the needles back?
The needle exchange program, it's controversial in our city. You know, a lot of people don't understand it. But you really have to look at what happens if you don't have these programs. And a good example is that county in Indiana, where they had an outbreak of HIV and hepatitis, and it's going to cost taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars to treat these patients. And that's really what we're trying to avoid here, is by limiting the secondary effects of not having these needles distributed. Clean needles do save lives. They keep our blood supply safe. They limit the number of HIV and hepatitis cases in our community, which makes us all healthier. But the downside to it is, yes, you will end up with some improperly disposed needles. And that's why we're really working with distributing the boxes. You know, before the Healthcare Coalition gave those 1,200 boxes, the needle exchange, you got needles, but you didn't get anywhere to put them. And so these sorts of things were, to me, was common sense that we would do. And hopefully now, at least anecdotally, talking to first responders and police, when they're going to a scene of an overdose, oftentimes there are fewer needles in the area, and they are using these boxes. And when we start adding things like the big drop boxes in our communities, I think we're going to see fewer needles thrown about our community, which is a good thing. I mean, it'd be win-win if we can prevent HIV and hepatitis with the needle exchange and get these needles disposed of properly. And I think we're going to get there, but we're going to have to keep working at it with distributing the boxes and having the large disposal boxes in our community.
And Al, are you hopeful that having these large disposal boxes within the community, I guess, is a more long-term way to address this issue? Because I'm sure that a concern of, you know, having these the smaller containers that you give out to, you know, people, that eventually you're going to run out, and, you know, where does the funding come from to buy more? So I don't know. Is this, a more long-term fix to the problem?
Well, I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that the larger drop boxes will help with the collection efforts. I can tell you that Black River Falls has two of the boxes located in their community, and they collect them about on a quarterly basis, so they probably don't have nearly the extent of the issue that La Crosse's has. So I would imagine we may be checking these boxes a lot more frequently. And I think that's one of the measures that we'll be able to collect. We'll be able to understand, are people using them? But, I mean, we're going to have a lot of promotion to do. We're obviously going to have to get out the message to the general community, certainly to those that are injection drug users. Certainly the AIDS Resource Center clients will be aware of the drop boxes. And like I said, again, some of the general messages to families and others so that they can dispose of their sharps, you know, properly. I can tell you that, Dr. Eberlein had mentioned this, that, you know, it's really necessary to have these programs. In fact, they're set up in 13 different communities within Wisconsin, and they really do show, they're evidence-based to show that they lower the cases of HIV infections, hepatitis B and C, and it'd be very costly. And then, as Dr. Eberlein said, there's other infections and problems that can certainly occur from injection drug use as well that can be very, very costly.
La Crosse County Health Educator Al Bliss is here with us today to talk about new state efforts and local efforts to address heroin abuse in La Crosse and Wisconsin. He's joined by Representative Jill Billings from La Crosse and Dr. Chris Eberlein, emergency physician at Gunderson Medical Center and co-chair of the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on opioid and heroin abuse. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about new efforts to address opioid and heroin abuse in Wisconsin. Last week, Governor Scott Walker called the legislature in a special session to begin new statewide measures to reduce heroin use and improve treatment in the state. The new efforts come as leaders in the La Crosse area continue to combat increasing use of the illicit drug. Joining us to talk about the issue are State Representative Jill Billings, a member of the Governor's Task Force on Opioid Abuse, Dr. Chris Eberlein, co-chair of the La Crosse County Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force, and Al Bliss, health educator from the La Crosse County Health Department. And Representative Billings, you know, we've been talking about, you know, the special session and different issues from the state level. And I know that in this legislative session where you are going to be considering, you know, several different pieces of legislation, you know, can you talk a little bit about those bills and I guess what they could do for the state and for our local community?
Sure. So there are 11 bills that are included in the recommendations, likely more to come as the year goes on. But I think some highlights include a recovery school pilot through the University of Wisconsin system so that a student would be able to receive inpatient treatment and go to school at the same time so they wouldn't fall behind in studies, and they're with other students who are also in recovery. There's another bill that allows parents to commit young adults who suffer from addiction. It would be a civil commitment, but the purpose of that would be to keep them safe. Parents have talked about struggling with their kids who are young adults, not children, but young adults, who are addicted, and the time that they feel like their child is safest is when they're in jail or prison because it's more difficult to get drugs there. But that's when the parents felt like, oh, thank goodness, now at least I know that I'm not going to get a call that there's been an overdose. So this would allow them to do a civil commitment similar to committing someone who has an alcohol addiction in order to keep them safe. There's also some increased treatment and diversion money, or TAD money. We've been successful with our treatment and diversion program in La Crosse County. Not all counties have treatment and diversion programs like we do. And the idea is that there are some people who have used, and really they shouldn't belong, they don't belong in jail or prison. That's not the place for them. We've learned that we cannot incarcerate our way out of this problem, and that got us into exploding corrections budgets in the 90s. And so there's a really a new way of looking at this, that if someone is using, what we should try to do is get them treatment, hold them accountable, but get them treatment and make sure that we help them become better members of society by changing their behavior and hanging out with a better group of people. And so I think that's a very positive thing that's been successful here. We can spread that in other areas of this state where they don't benefit from that. Now, on the other hand, if someone is dealing drugs or is a very bad actor, we do want to hold those people accountable. And if they are people who are really preying on people who have addictions and really bad actors that have violence in their actions also, we want them to go to jail. And so there's $420 million for criminal investigation agents through the Wisconsin Department of Justice. There's work on more access to medical addiction specialists. We know we need more healthcare advisors and healthcare people who have knowledge in treatment and addiction, especially to advise, again, those rural areas where they don't have the capacity that we do in population centers. There is also money for three medically assisted treatment centers in Wisconsin. So this is the idea that people can be taking certain medications or drugs to help them stay off of the more addictive, damaging drugs. It helps them maintain, be in recovery and not relapse into taking illicit drugs. So we're also already at a point where, you know, as Al and Chris talked about, we've kind of dug that hole, right? People who have been prescribed opiates or have used them from a medicine cabinet of a family member or friend and are addicted and maybe have switched to heroin. And really we need to deal with that issue along with prescribing fewer and getting more drugs out of our communities. We have to deal with the people who are addicted and struggling, and we have to show them caring and compassion. Addiction is a disease. I've said before that if we have friends who have children who, you know, a friend would say, my child has cancer, you know, we come and we bring casseroles. We ask, what can we do to support you and your family? There's more of a stigma that we're trying to overcome with addiction, where people aren't sure what to do. And those families and our friends who have members who are suffering from addiction need our compassion and caring.
Obviously, this is, with the governor calling a special session, you know, placing a particular emphasis on this issue on a state level. Do you feel like this issue, you know, the prevalence of heroin abuse, or I guess the potential for it to grow, I mean, do you feel like lawmakers' attention to this issue is equal to I guess, the urgency of this issue?
I think that Wisconsin was really not keeping up with the issue and dealing with the crisis. But I think with the work that's been done in the legislature in the last session, we've done better. And I think this helps us even more, this initiative through the opioid task force. You know, when you look at addiction and the toll it takes, it's hard on the individual, on our friends, on our family. It's hard on our community. It's an expensive problem. And the governor's also talked about workforce. You know, we are a state who really is in need of a strong workforce and more skilled workers. And when we have people who are sitting on the sideline, whether because they've been incarcerated or suffer from addiction and have a hard time getting a job, that's an issue. You know, these are issues for all of us statewide, that we want everyone to live up to their potential. And so I think this, hopefully this endeavor through the task force will help people live up to their potential and help, you know, everybody be a contributing member of society. I think that's what people want to be.
And so obviously these are, you know, bills that will be considered in this year's legislative session. But, you know, there have been bills in the past to address heroin and opioid abuse. And, you know, Al, on a local level, on a county level, you know, have we seen, I guess, any impacts or any benefits from some of the statewide measures we've seen in the past?
Right, and being sarcastic here a little bit, there's been so many wonderful bills passed. There's 17 of them in the HOPE legislation, HOPE 1 and 2. I can't even give you all the different numbers of them and everything. But regardless of that, one of the ones that I know made a bit of impact here, and I know Representative Billings and Dr. Eberlein can speak to this one, is that in a case of an overdose scene, that law enforcement now would report to the PDMP, the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, but also to the physician that, you know, there was, if a pill bottle or whatever was found in the case of an overdose death, that this would be reported. And I know that kind of communication really helps because, you know, we're understanding there's a lot of different methods of diversion. In fact, I was just looking at the total number of La Crosse County drug charges. This was in 2015, but meth was the highest at almost 680. So these were charges and arrests, marijuana at 572, but then the third one was prescription drugs at 382. That used to actually be, just a few years ago, number one. It was above meth, it was above marijuana, and it certainly was above heroin at that time. So now it actually takes a third place, which is good, but it's still not, you know, good enough. But I would say that's definitely been one that I've seen an impact. And Dr. Eberlein could certainly speak to the one that passed. I remember the date because I know in February of 2014, part of the legislation that passed was to allow all first responders to be able to carry Narcan. And I know at that point, our La Crosse Fire Department and others were already began to carrying carrying Narcan and were already beginning to save lives that very first month. So that's another one that definitely I recall that has made a significant difference and impact on saving lives and getting people hopefully on the road to recovery. And, you know, as Representative Billings was saying, I mean, that's a struggle because there's such a stigma with people saying that, well, why are you helping this individual? It was their choice. And, you know, using drugs the first time, especially something that's so addictive like heroin, that might be, you know, certainly a choice the first time. But after even the second or third time, you're already facing addiction with heroin. It's that powerful. And the same holds true with methamphetamine. I mean, it's just as addictive. It's called the mother of all dopamine releasers. And the reason they call it that is because it releases almost more dopamine than any other drug. And so the person develops the tolerance, they develop the, you know, the addiction within a very short period of time. And one of the factors is, too, is that if this begins with people of younger ages, you know, that's just really important to look at prevention among young, our young population as well, speaking of, you know, middle school, high school youth.
And so, you know, we've been talking about efforts that we're looking at right now to address heroin and opioid abuse and also efforts that have been, you know, going on since 2013. Dr. Eberline, do you think that this is an issue that we're ever going to be able to get in front of? You know, is this going to be something that, you know, our state and our community is going to have to continue to address? Or is there, I guess, a light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I'd like to say that we're going to solve this problem in the next 5 years, but realistically, you know, this illicit drug use has been a problem for a long, long time, well before I've been around. So are we going to eventually solve this problem? No. But can we make it a lot better? Absolutely. And I think we're working on that. And, you know, a few other things that we're going to be working on in the next year and things that we'd like to see would be more training for addiction medicine. I think that's really important that a prescriber who can prescribe this medicine should be given the tools to help someone out of the dependence of it. And we're not there yet. In addition, increasing the use of Narcan, as Al has stated, you know, that is a life-saving drug, and we really need to make sure that that is in our community, easily accessed, and keeping up with protocols. This drug, even the doses are changing with that drug. With the new intranasal, it's about quadruple the dose that it used to be, so we have to stay up on those protocols. First responders know how to use it. And then keep people educated on the synthetic opioids that we're seeing enter our community, whether it be fentanyl, carfentanil, U4770. These are incredibly potent opioids that we're going to see more of because they're cheap to produce. You know, one grain of salt size of carfentanil will overdose a human. And you've got kilos of this coming into the country, which is enough to overdose 50 million people. And the reason why they're doing that is because they don't have to smuggle much into the country. They're able to produce it offshore, sneak it into our country, and dilute their heroin with that because it's cheaper. And so things like that, it gets in the community. You're going to need large doses of Narcan to reverse it. And our first responders and police and everyone need to know how to handle these sorts of patients. So these are just some of the things that we're going to have to continue to work on over the next years to come.
Dr. Chris Eberline is a co-chair of the La Crosse County Heroin Task Force. Also here with us today is Al Bliss, health educator for the La Crosse County Health Department. They've joined us for a conversation on opioid and heroin abuse and state and local efforts to combat the issue. Also joining us today is Representative Jill Billings from La Crosse, a member of the Governor's Task Force on Opioid Abuse. And Representative, before we go, I want to take a few minutes to talk about other issues that are important in this year's legislative session. Recently, a much-anticipated report on the state's transportation issues came out, and so that conversation around funding for roads continues to be a primary issue. You know, what are you looking for as far as this conversation and funding that you think will really help, you know, our part of the state?
Well, this year I think I'm going to be in the thick of it this year because I was appointed to the Transportation Committee for the first time. This will be a new committee for me, so I have talked with Senator Petrowski on the other side of the aisle, who was in the Assembly and now in the Senate and a leader on the transportation issues, and also talked to members of my caucus just to get up to speed on serving in that committee. But, you know, there are challenges that face us with transportation. We have the third worst roads in the United States. Certainly, as I talk to my constituents, I know that this is an issue for Wisconsin and for my area, this state. The governor's Secretary of Transportation actually came out with a package of different options for us a few years ago. The problem was there was not the political will in the Republican caucuses and among their leadership to look at the hard decisions that were ahead of them. And in the last budget, unfortunately, we borrowed money for roads, and that just left us with roads that were not as good as the roads that were given to us, and we left that debt to future people to pay for that road. So I was not happy with that solution at all. So this year, it seems like there are people who want to look at some options and look at things other than borrowing for our roads, which I think is a positive thing. The question is, what are we going to do? So tolls have been thrown out there. While I visited my mom in Florida and drove to my daughter's school in Ohio when she was going to school in Ohio, I would like to ding the people, especially from Illinois, who drive through our state and collect some funding from them. Really, it's a long time to get that set up and big infrastructure, and you don't really get your bang for buck with tolls. So that's not my favorite. We've looked at, in fact, the Wisconsin Manufacturing Commerce group were in agreement that a 5 cent per gallon tax on gas would help out. Many other states have done that. Iowa made that decision years ago, and it's helped fund their roads all along while we've been borrowing. And I think when gas was down to $2 a gallon, I don't think that would have been a hardship for people to have an extra 5 cents a gallon for tax, or at least index the tax we have so it keeps up with costs. We also are looking at vehicle registrations. You know, some people that have, as we have more fuel efficient cars, there's less revenue coming in through gas taxes. There are a lot of options that are out there, and there's not agreement. The governor does not want to have an increase in a tax or a fee without recouping that from some other place in the budget. Now, our budget has been cut to the bone. There's not a lot of excess that's there floating around to find. So that's a difficulty. The leader in the Assembly, Robin Voss, has talked about projects in his area that have been left undone. Now the price tags keep growing and growing every year that we put this off. And the Secretary of Transportation has just left, and there's a new secretary coming in. This is a tough time for that new secretary who doesn't have that engineering experience, that breadth of experience that Secretary Gottlieb had. So it's going to be a challenge for Secretary Ross, the new secretary. This is the number one issue that's facing us. And going forward, there's not agreement anywhere. As I was talking to Senator Petrowski in the Senate, he said, yeah, there's still a lot of disagreement. So this will be an interesting thing to watch going forward. Something will have to be reached. At this point, I cannot predict what it's going to be because my friends on the Republican side can't even agree on what it's going to be.
And very briefly, K-12 education funding continues to also be another big issue as we look at, you know, setting up the next budget, especially for rural schools. I know that is a particular issue. You know, what are you really looking at in those sorts of conversations for Western Wisconsin?
Funding for education is such a complicated issue, and rural schools are in need of funding. The problem is that to change that funding formula is a difficult, I think, and long process of thought and consideration to make sure that it's fair for everyone. So when the budget is due in February, I think it's kind of a tough time to come together with a quick plan. There have been plans in the past that have actually ended up in court. So this is something that has to be well thought out. I'm concerned that there will be more money being siphoned from public schools, as has happened in the past, and will go to private voucher schools, when our public schools really need that funding. So going forward, my prediction would be that not a lot is going to happen with funding at this point, although some leadership on the Republican side have talked about changes in the funding formula. I don't see that happening right away.
We've been talking with State Representative Jill Billings about different issues important to the Cooley region in this year's legislative session, and that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.